Podcast with a K. Well, you join us, dear listener, for another Podcast with a K, in which we're discussing the Doctor Who Series 10 episode number 6, Extremis. Now, there's a bit of a strange thing happening this evening on this podcast. Well, for a start off, it's an evening, as we often are these days, but we've actually managed to be able to bring you this podcast within minutes of us all watching the episode on the Saturday night, which this has never happened before. So it's possible that we might be... what you hear in this podcast may evolve in subsequent weeks, because we are fresh from watching Doctor Who, each of us, in our respective time zones. Although James and I do share the same official time zone, obviously, because I'm further north, it is slightly later here than it is where James is.
I'm not called James today.
No?
I've changed my name.
What's your name today?
My name is the Borad.
The Borad?
Yeah.
Okay, so are you now in Loch Ness?
No.
Oh, that's all right, because if you were now in Loch Ness, you would be further north than me, so it would be later. But anyway, if you know anything about railway timetables and how we measure time, you'll know what I'm talking about. If you don't, go look it up. Anyway, so Extremis, in which the Doctor meets some new aliens who like to plan ahead, I think is the best way of putting it. Before we go into it, I just want to... something I've just been reading on Wikipedia regarding the critical reception of Doctor Who Series 10 up to Episode 5. Because we've talked about the audience figures over the past couple of weeks, and I don't want to get bogged down with that again this week. On Rotten Tomatoes, Doctor Who Series 10 so far holds a 95% score, with an average score of 3.66, which is out of 5, which is a fantastic score. That's really good, and I think that's I think that really backs up what we've been saying about Doctor Who Series 10 so far, is that it's been really good to watch. And there might have been no, you know, there's possibly been no, you know, big, amazing, ultra memorable stories, but the level has been far higher and far more enjoyable to watch than it has been for the last couple of years or so. Which brings us to Extremis. I'm going to stop talking. I'm going to let Brian start.
I start.
You may start. Yeah, you just because Extremis is a very particular type of story which may leave the viewer feeling a bit disappointed at the end, isn't it?
Or Borad.
Or Borad. I think I see where James is going.
I sat watching it and I found it intriguing and interesting, and the Missy stuff wasn't getting on my tits too much. Even the River Song mention didn't get on my tits. But I did feel that by the time we got to the end, that I just wasted in 45 minutes when...
You were bored.
I wasn't bored. I wasn't bored. I wasn't bored at any point during it. I
was pissed.
I was pissed off at the end that I'd sat through a basically, I'd sat through a simulation. That's how I feel about it. I think it was a good episode. I loved everything that was happening in it. Some of it was better than other bits. The bit with the Pope and Bill's place was obviously ridiculously silly and a bit of padding. It's a bit Doctor on the Tank with a guitar. But, you know, the whole thing about the CERN thing and the monks and all that, I thought that was really interesting. But then finding out that basically I didn't have to watch it, that's where I'm coming from. I'm thinking like, well, that's the worst cliffhanger ever.
Okay. Yeah, it is a tough one because I kind of had like similar feelings, and I generally feel that way when TV shows do an episode or so of basically a story that's not happening. And I'm trying to remember another example of one, and I know there was one where characters just like all weren't themselves, and I can't think of what it was. That said, I felt I'm going to give some credit here to Moffat, okay, because unlike you, I was you know, I felt the River Song mentions were pointless. Seeing the diary again was just once again providing continuity to eras of the show, to an era of the show that doesn't need to be called back to. And I felt the Pope stuff was over the top and kind of unnecessary. That said, it seemed like the episode was going well in most cases. But the one thing I will give Moffat credit for is that he did, whether he intended this or not, he didn't give us a pointless episode where it only happened for these simulations and we wasted 45 minutes, which is what I was concerned about. I was actually a little bit more concerned that he was going to tell us that, you know, we've wasted the last, you know, two seasons, because I thought it was going to go back to Missy's little trick from the end of series 8. And we were living in a simulation since then. And, you know, we'll find out that Clara's alive and all this other stuff, you know, but really alive, not dead alive. But you know what I mean? For another day. What I liked about how he handled this was the fact that the simulation doctor was able to send his memories to the real doctor. And therefore, even though he didn't technically live it, it is as if our doctor has actually still lived that adventure. And I think that's what's different to other stories that I've seen that have done kind of the same, hey, this adventure happened, but it didn't really happen because these people weren't real kind of situation. So I'm going to give him credit for that one. I mean, there's negatives to the story. There's some positives to the story. And one of the positives that I could say is that, you know, I didn't completely hate it like I usually do a Moffat story. But I felt that that at least was a redeeming factor at the end when I got to that point.
Okay. And James?
There is no James here. There is but the Borad. Drinking a nice cup of Borad.
Sorry, bored.
Borad. Never said I was bored. I said I was Borad.
Sorry, Borad.
Borad is like a mixture of being bored, but you're still rad, so you're no less cool, or you know, no one wants to be around. No one wants to be around a bored person, but a Borad.
I'm not entirely certain that in towards the end of the second decade of the 21st century, anyone wants to be around anyone who's rad, either.
Rad. I think you'll find it's coming back.
Only in particular, yeah. We'll not get into that. Go on. What?
Yeah, I am Borad. No, I was Borad all the way through it. It felt like, you know, saying I put on one thread that it felt like going back to series 6, and yet, funnily enough, the other, because I've been ill this week, I've been watching a few old episodes of Doctor Who, and I watched a few from series 6 and series 5, and I must admit, I actually enjoyed them a little more this time round than I did the first time, even though they were selective stories. Amy's Choice, the Silurian two-parter, the Doctor's Wife, and the Almost People two-parter as well. And I sort of quite enjoyed them. So to sort of say this feels
I
like...
I think the Almost People's a grower, actually. It is better.
I think it probably is, yeah. I think it goes against what I was saying last week, that Doctor hasn't really done any good two-parters since it came back. And to be fair... Yeah, that's not bad. It's, you know, it's a bit, I suppose there's still no real heights, peaks in it, but it's still not bad. Yeah, anyway, point being is to say it's like Series 6, I think it's unfair. I think it carries the qualities of what made Series 6 and most of the series since 2010 feel bad are in this episode. It's a mix of clever ideas which feel like they feel they're so clever, they're just waiting for you to just... go behind them and give them a good healthy pat on the back for being so ingenious, and it didn't really get me at all. I can
agree with that, by the way.
Yeah, I mean it's like the simulation thing. I wasn't expecting it, but I wasn't really impressed by it either. I think as well, as soon as sort of 40 something writers start trying to write about video games, I don't know, and how computers work,
50 something, I think.
Yep. Okay, I was being generous. It just doesn't, I don't know, it just feels like it's territory which isn't quite as new as they possibly think.
I mean, I'm a 40-something writer. I'm pretty certain I can comfortably write about computer games.
Yeah, but if you're writing about computer games in a way that really doesn't take you far removed from The Matrix, which came out in 1999, so we're talking 18 years ago, then you're sort of kind of saying, well, if you're thinking that's innovative, you know, you're behind by two decades, mate. And that's kind of where I felt with it, is that yes, within the story, that still kind of worked, but it just didn't feel like it was giving me anything. I felt a bit like you as well. I did feel that, well, that was a complete waste of my time. I really disliked the Bill scene. I thought that was really out of odds with understanding anything to do with sexualities. It just felt so on the nose. You know, here we are with this girl. This girl's just obviously feeling quite uncomfortable because it's the first time she's come out. Oh my God, the Pope! She'll suddenly think, because we have to now assume she was Catholic once, it wasn't mentioned, that, you know, that's going to make it, you know, it just felt like a really bad sort of 70s five-minute sketch show.
Oh, right. I was going towards Carry On, but yeah.
No, it wasn't even like Carry On. But yeah, it was just so set up. It was so convoluted. It made no sense. I think thrusting the Pope in there anyway just felt...
That is the weirdest euphemism I've ever heard.
Well, it probably would have been if it wasn't in an episode which was also trying to make a really sort of edgy comment about, you know, the female Pope as well. And I just felt, this isn't needed. It's just...
There is that old abject smuggery of Moffat's writing seeping through in places, isn't there?
It felt like that. I suppose the things where... it didn't even do those things well. I found the things with him being blind, I found them frustrating rather than interesting. I felt that it didn't go anywhere either. I found the whole plot points again of him sort of, you know, taking the 2 minutes, which might in the future take some great, you know, burden or curse, you know, swings and roundabouts of having this moment of sight, just again felt like we were back to series 6. And then the whole thing with Missy again, it felt convoluted, it felt out of place. I was watching it thinking, I'm not actually sure I follow this. I know we're meant to be thinking, oh, who's going to be executed here, but it was so naffly done. I didn't even feel like there was a payoff when it turned round, you know what I mean? It just felt rubbish.
By the way, real quick, since you brought it up, was anyone surprised who was in the vault?
No.
I don't think so. I think everyone was disappointed.
Only thing I was hoping was that it might have been John Sim, and he might have been there since he went to Gallifrey. But I, you know, my assumption was that it was Missy, and I was hoping for at least a John Sim master. But this episode, I was like, oh, you see, all that mystery just... took away all the fun in this one moment, you know.
I just felt that as well felt contrived. The whole notion of this death, which would then require this mandatory of 1,000 years, that someone would have to stay by and look after them. Again, it just felt like, well, how many races would do that? It was like, what? I don't know. I just watched it and I was thinking, this feels so much like 2012 or 2011. It feels... Yeah. Feel really, really messy, convoluted. It doesn't go in any direction. It doesn't... I'd find most audiences would have switched off. I'm sure they would have switched off from that. Because, I mean, sometimes he can do convoluted and it can be engaging. But this felt convoluted and it didn't feel engaging at all. I didn't really care about these portals. I didn't care about the people on the Hadrian. It just had no tension for me at all. It was... It's staggering sometimes how... A show you like can sometimes do the worst episodes in totally different ways. I mean, I'd always said that Kill the Moon was the worst episode for me, possibly, or Forest of the Night. But this might be. But I can't quite work out, because those are two different types of bad episodes, if you see what I mean. I mean, it's sort of beautifully put together. You know, the actors were all fine. There's nothing in the script which was inherently bad. And there was no inherently irritating characters in there. I thought Nardole was vaguely irritating, but there was nothing immediately problematic. It was just the story. And I think that's kind of rare in Doctor Who for it to be just the story that, to me, was the issue. It's not River Song. Or it's not Children. I suppose Kill the Moon's the nearest thing in the fact that was a bit scattered. But this is the first time I think I've watched a Moffat thing, and I've thought, actually, the only thing that's really wrong with this is the story. The story is the problem. It's not the script. It's not the irritating new character he's introduced that's going to sort of do everything for everyone. It's just simply the story.
I think it's the idea of the story. You know, at its core, that's a good idea. But I think, you know, the steps throughout the plot that don't work. And then there's the ending, which just leaves you disappointed. So there's a core of a good idea in there, but because of the execution of it, you end up thinking, well, that wasn't good enough.
It's the Android Invasion, episode one. It's just a borrowed plot.
They created
Earth to see if they could conquer Earth. And that's fine because it is a good concept for these aliens to kind of like anticipate how humans might interact before they get there. It's battle simulation. It's tests, you know, and it's a good core idea. I do agree. I was hoping when we saw those portals that they weren't projections. I was hoping this wasn't a fake world. I was hoping that it was kind of more so along the lines of what I wanted to see this season do, which was play along with the idea of alternate realities. And I was hoping that those doorways were alternate realities. And I was hoping that CERN was so upset because they had opened a portal to another doorway. And maybe they were the ones who were responsible for the end of the universe, or that universe's particular world.
Yeah, it was hinting at a bigger thing, wasn't it? It was hinting at a far more terrifying end than, we're just Lego people or whatever.
Yes, and it's sad when you can watch an episode and think of better ideas, like very easily, than what was actually aired. So I didn't hate it as much as James, but I didn't love it, and I certainly didn't like it as much as any of the other episodes that have aired this season.
Yeah.
For instance, going back to the vault again, the vault seemed like it was an interesting kind of time war kind of buildup. However, they ruined that for me the day that the Doctor actually entered the vault. Once he entered the vault and he himself already knew what was inside, the mystery was dead for me, and it wasn't really that worth caring about, because now it was already, well, the Doctor knows, that means it's got to be something that he trusts or thinks is relatively safe, rather than having him make a promise to guard this vault on Earth and not realizing that he's guarding maybe the most dangerous thing ever or something like that. But concept-wise, I think, as James has said, you can have a bad beginning, a bad middle, but not a bad end. I'm kind of hoping, since this is supposedly part one of a three-parter, that maybe this episode isn't fully necessary, that if you were to kind of rewatch this series, you could skip this one, you know, and the next two would still make sense without it. Because I was even thinking, like, using the concept of an alien creating a fake Earth to run their battle simulations, what would have been better, having the Doctor have lived that so he knew what was coming the way that Moffat chose to do, or having the Doctor have no clue? Because the only way that this episode could work is if you save it so that it's not an episode that didn't really happen. It actually happened for one character at least. Or if you make it be an episode that lets the audience know something is coming, but our main characters have no idea. And I don't know which one's better. I kind of, on one hand, think it would be a little bit better. It would almost be Mission to the Unknown, in a sense. You know, an episode where it wasn't about the Doctor. It was about the aliens, and we were getting to know them. And maybe it would have been better spent doing a little bit more of that than what we had actually gotten. So there's plenty of ways to save this story, this episode. But in the past, we've talked about rating episodes, and we haven't done it this season, which I'm really glad about. But I wouldn't do it the one time because I didn't want to rate a part one of a two-part story. That's like rating half a movie. You can't really do that. So it's not the best episode. It wasn't the best. It wasn't the most enjoyable. There were some good ideas. It didn't really come together in the end, but I'm really hoping that the next two parts can save it. But unfortunately, it was what I was expecting from Moth.
It's going to take a lot of saving. I mean, they're going to have to really up the ante to sort of explain why any race which has such disproportionately wonderful technology needs it to take over a planet which, let's be frank, this year is not too far from just destroying itself. You know, it doesn't take that much really to take over this planet. And sort of level of simulation, to the point where it's also got to extrapolate things outside of the parameters of this planet, ergo the Doctor being blind, which occurred outside of that temporal zone. that's a lot of ingenuity within a computer system to simulate to defeat a planet. And that, again, yeah, you can go with it and say it's just a story, but it, to me, that felt at odds. I was just listening to that thinking, really? You need to take over this planet using that level of detail? You must be the worst enemy aliens ever, because none of the other enemy aliens needed that sort of amount of level of detail. They often needed a small warehouse just outside London in the Pertwee era with four slimy things and a head honcho and one traitor, and they could take over the world. You know, you need to simulate the whole... You mean, that is taking careful steps way too far. So that didn't make sense to me. And I also kind of felt, you know, we said this has been done before, The Matrix, you said before, The Android Invasion, if you go back further. In between those two, Babylon 5 did an episode in one of its later series where it was only a small segment of an episode, but it had computer simulations of its main characters who then destroyed the people simulating them by uploading data from that simulation outside of the actual virtual simulation. Exactly the
really?
Same sort of...
Was the Doctor
that's, wow. That's the last episode of season 4. So, you know, it's not a new idea in any way so whatsoever. So I think, again, because, and that obviously, to be fair, depends on what you've seen, because there are no new ideas. If you've seen a television show or you read a book which has inspired something, you're going to find something little less mind-blowing than if you haven't. But it did kind of feel when the Doctor's going, I'm the Doctor, and I'm going to think, yeah, you're going to email it. I'm going to do the one thing you're going to email it. Well, I'm going to, you even showed us in the first act what you're going to do. This speech is going nowhere. We know what you're going to do. You're going to email it. I'm going to email it. Oh, right, fine. Okay, that was the big crescendo. So.
I didn't see that coming, actually. I thought he was going to do something a bit more imaginative, like get his eyesight back. Because if he's a computer simulation, there's absolutely no... If he's a computer simulation and he's in the system already and he knows enough to be able to email from within the system, he should also be able to get his eyesight back.
Computer simulation, let's also remember, also can simulate the inside of the TARDIS and can also simulate his sonic devices as well.
Yeah.
Perfectly. So, I mean, that's the other problem with this sort of narrative trick, is that you are arguing at the end of the episode that everything that the audience has seen has been simulated by someone else, which means that they have to have access to all that to simulate it. Now, maybe, as Brian says, we'll find the next couple of episodes as a reason for this. Maybe they're in league with John Sim Master, who might be able to give them hints. I don't know. You know, but it does feel like it's a bit of a stretch just to sort of play this turnaround in the final act, which, incidentally, trying to actually find the acts in this is actually kind of hard because it just meanders again. And he seems to do this a fair bit in the recent ones. His first episode of season 9 meandered in the same sort of way. Mm. You know, it starts off with the Missy thing, then it goes to the Doctor, who meets the Pope, who then goes and gets his companion. They go over to the Vatican. They wander around some rooms. Some go to a virtual simulator. He runs around a bit. And then it's all over. And it's a bit like, well, where is that? Where's the direction in that? It feels like it's trying to sort of do something Da Vinci Code-ish, and it's just bumbling.
I was going to mention that myself, because when I was watching it and I saw that, you know, the Pope had come and then they had gone to the Vatican, they had also gone to Bill's place, CERN, and everything. And I thought, like, he always does this. He always makes them go to far too many places. And you're right. So I was glad to hear you say that, because when I saw it, I was really getting annoyed. Like, can we please stop? Can we choose a destination?
And none of the destinations.
You have 45 minutes. You don't even need to show two, you know, need to show two.
You didn't need the Vatican at all. Yeah. I mean, you needed a position. You needed a place, yes, where to get this information or to dump this information.
We've got the portals as well, which add locations as well. So they add six or seven places in the episode.
But those places, I mean, the whole Hadron Collider, which I seem to guess before even they actually showed the poster, I have no idea why. But they, was just utter exposition, really. It just explained what the book was about, which, again, was, you know, as an idea, as you say, I don't disagree, is a fairly interesting idea as things go. But it does feel shoehorned. It did feel like, you know, this was, I don't know.
I've got it. It's the David Bowie approach to songwriting.
What, you mean you cut pieces up?
Cut pieces up and rearrange them, yeah.
Yeah, I tend to feel like David Bowie, that's a lie. I never believed for a minute he did that. I believe he might have done a little bit of that and then put them in the position he wanted. He is a very meticulous man, from what I could understand. I don't believe that he allowed that sort of anarchy into his life.
No, I
could be wrong. I could be wrong.
I wouldn't have thought so. But I agree with you. I think he probably.
But yeah, I know. I see what you're pointing. But, saying,
you see what I mean about that? Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. It just felt fragmented, and it felt. I think the problem is when things are very fragmented, like you said, Christian, you need to have a payoff to make it feel like it's been worth that fragmented trip. If you've had to sort of concentrate all the way through because you're getting sort of unusual exposition, it's setting itself up as an episode which is different to what's been done before. And to be fair, it was trying to do something new. Mm. Which, you know, you can't knock it for that. It didn't feel like his previous work.
Apart from the priest shooting himself perfectly on cue in the vault.
Yes.
For comic effect.
And priest, I suppose, as well. It's not the first time he's taking a jab at religion, you know, with...
And why was the doctor bleeding anyway? Or why was the cyber doctor bleeding?
I don't know.
I had assumed he just tripped while he was blind, but yeah, they could have explained that.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
No, I don't know. It did feel like I was trying to do something different, but if you're going to take that fragmented path, you've got to have a good payoff, because you've had audiences on a Saturday night where they really just want to sit and enjoy a bit of an adventure, having to concentrate, trying to pull pieces together unnecessarily, perhaps more than they would be expected to. So your ending's got to be something which makes them feel something exciting. And there was nothing in that ending. I mean, this is what Brian said, what we keep saying, it's becoming our mantra, you know, you've got to have a good ending. You can have those rubbishy middle and the big endings, but you've got to have a good ending. Best example is Vincent of the Doctor. I mean, that's an episode where I was bored all the way through it, but the ending was so good, I look back at it as if it was like the most amazing episode of the series. That's in Series 5.
You know, it's funny. People rave about that episode. I thought it was okay. You know, I mean, the ending was okay. Nice. Show Vincent Van Gogh, or however you want to say it, you know, hey, this is, people appreciate your work. That's Tom great. You cried. Awesome. It was wonderful. But it was just kind of like, blah, like, I never watch it. You know,
I no, nor do I.
Never think about it, you know.
Speaking of past episodes,
yeah,
Joseph Long, who played the Pope, previously appeared in Turn Left as Mr. Colasanto, the Italian gentleman who Donna and
I was going to mention that.
Mother lived with, yeah.
See, that's
the second he came on screen, I looked at him and I said, really? They got that guy? Like,
I didn't recognize him.
Already played a bigger character, like not a bigger character, but a pretty recognizable character to me.
But that also got me as well. And the problem with this sort of thing, as soon as you lock it down to a simulation, which is what it tries to make such a big point of by the fact that all those simulated pieces will all come to exactly the same number, because it's obviously they're all correlated by exactly the same code, despite being utterly different, which is the whole point of the simulation, because otherwise you wouldn't need a simulation, because if you're all going to program them all to be exactly the same, then it's not going to give you a copy. But if you get past that, the whole thing of like when the Pope appears in Bill's apartment, she goes, the friend goes, oh my God, it's the Pope. It's not your reaction. Your reaction would be, why is there someone dressed like the Pope? Why is there a like the Pope?
Totally.
So that feels totally unrealistic. And part of you thinks, well, this whole episode is unrealistic because it's a virtual simulation. But then the episode undermines that ability to put it aside and says, yeah, but this simulation is meant to be Earth accurate. So if it's not Earth accurate, there's no point in running the simulation, because the simulation is to get an Earth accurate result out of a certain sort of plan. So you're locked into the fact that you've got to accept this world as being real, as absurd and as silly as it was.
Well, you have another problem there, too. Like, if you made that world absurd and silly, like, really, if he really tried, he could have made it absurd and silly to the point where we would have sat there and said, okay, something's going on. What the heck is happening? But instead, he made it very much like we've seen from Series 5 all the way through 9. So it there was nothing in there to tell us that it was absurd. It was just more Moffat absurd. Like, if somebody else had written that episode and they wanted us to start guessing that maybe things weren't real, they could have done it so well. But Moffat just did things that he had already done in the, quote, regular world. It didn't make it seem crazy.
Can we also talk about that, what I thought, again, was really terrible, the fatalities on the watch. To calculate... and then how many fatalities, and that number making them all run away. I just like, oh.
I'll be honest, I was okay with the guards kind of going, you know what, forget this. You know, he's a big bad deal. What I didn't like was the comic runaway of the head guy. I felt he should have been more stern. He should have been true to who he was. It shouldn't have been a comic runaway. He should have given a threat to the doctor, but just said, fine, you know, basically in not these exact words, but basically you've won this round. Watch your back, you know, and that's what it should have been. He goes for the comedy too poorly, Moffat, when he writes. Like, for instance, I didn't think Nardole was that bad until they came out of the portal. Well, there were two areas even before the portal, but the one that really got me was when they came out of one of the gateways, and he was kind of oddly weeping, and Bill asked him if he was okay, and he just kept, yeah, no, I'm okay, and then he would weep again, and I'm like, this is ridiculous, this is stupid, like, get serious, you know, that and part of the conversation that he had about him being a bad man in the hallway and whatnot, I didn't really think he was that bad otherwise, and I kept thinking, okay, I got past that bump, don't give me another one, and then he would keep throwing another one.
Sorry, which bit is this, bad man?
When he says he's the badass.
Yeah, oh, when no, he's trying no. to get yeah, tell Bill yeah. to stand behind him. Yeah,
but that was what was really annoying about that is that it's a moment where you actually give him an extra dimension, and then the very next moment, for a cheap laugh, you totally undermine it having him screaming. I mean, why did you do that? Give him that moment, because the whole point is the Doctor respects him. Let us see a reason why the Doctor respects him, because you're not giving as many. So when he has a reason for it, let him. Because what he's not saying, he's not making a stupid threat. He's not being an asshole. He's not trying to... He's basically saying, I'm here to protect you. It's what I'm meant to do. Bloody well, get behind me. And that's fine. That's not like he needs to be undermined for that. That's a fair, courageous thing to be doing. So,
well, and did anybody else think about the fact that, you know, Bill, I get what you were trying to do. Make Bill sit there and go, I don't need a guy to protect me. Fine, I get that. But did anybody else remember that Nardole has a robotic body? All he had to do was tell her, hey, guess what? You can bleed. I won't.
Yeah.
Get behind me. You know? I mean, it's just...
But I mean, even...
It could have been so simple.
I mean, if they were both people on a normal level, you could understand Bill going, hey, look, I don't need to be undermined. I don't need to be undermined by... As I'm sure I have as a 18-year-old or whatever, 19-year-old female, undermined or shoved aside by many men through my life, I don't need another man telling me to go and stand behind. But this man in particular does have experience. Whatever his experience is, she might not know it, but he's clearly quite more experienced in these situations than her. So in a sense, him going first does have some sense, in the same way that if you're on a spaceship with a spaceman, and you were going to go around a few corridors, you wouldn't go, I'm going to lead the way. You might let the person who has some more experience of those areas lead the way. And that's kind of where I feel like, you know, this is where Moffat sort of fails. He seems to try and put in relevant contemporary or cultural issues that he feels should be highlighted. And I think, yeah, highlighting gay relationships, I think, is important. People say you shouldn't have to, but I'm afraid you do, because there is still a lot of homophobia in the world. You know, you do have to, you know, he wants to highlight the questions of religion and the role of women in religion. Again, that's a topic. You know, you could say that's one that should be highlighted in culture, and you know, gender, and you know, how we treat women, how women should not be treated as being precious or weak, and they should be treated as equals. I feel he's trying to make those debates, but they just don't work. They just don't flow. They just sort of dither. So, yeah. I kind of wish I'd enjoyed it as much as you did. You two sort of maybe enjoyed bits of it.
Yeah, no, you definitely enjoyed it less than me. And okay, when we call out the worst episodes of the show, I still think Love and Monsters, Kill the Moon, whatever the forest one was, you know, and I'm sure there's another one in there that I'm missing. Time in the Rani, right. What else was there? There was plenty more that were just terrible, especially last season. But
just say last season.
This one I felt, this one I felt there were good ideas. I got what they were trying to do, and I tried to stick with those ideas. And this is by no means a compliment for the episode, because clearly it did. focusing on those things rather than enjoying it as a whole is not the way you should be enjoying an episode. But I am just hoping that the payoff in the next episode is worth what we went through in this one. It's like we've said before about him, though. He's a great ideasman, but when he tries to put it all together himself, he fails. So hearing certain aspects of how this series came together, I really kind of wish that he had had a proofreader or somebody go over his ideas and kind of help him out with this script. He used to do some great stuff, like we always say in the Russell T. Davis era. And I'm sure that there's a way that this story could have been done and made to work well and not have cheap jokes that would have made it be stand out. But as it is, I thought the weakest episode was Knock Knock, but now I have to put this one below it, you know, and it's okay. It's an okay episode, but it was not, you know, sad. It's sad to get halfway. I thought we were going to get to halfway and go, wow, how is he doing it? But when I heard that he was writing the episode, I really thought it was going to be awful. And it wasn't great, but I don't want to say it was awful. But it's a sad point to see that we got halfway and he did drop the ball.
Yeah, I think there's some issues with the direction of this episode. And there are some very, very good, stunning moments. You know, the whole sort of like short-sightedness and the chase in the vault when the monks turn up to do whatever it is they were... I don't know what they were planning to do to the Doctor, because they never really said. Maybe they were just going to point at him and make him disassemble or whatever. I think, you know, good direction there, and there's some good use of CGI, there's some good use of locations, and I love the set for the projector, because it felt very sort of 1980. It felt like it could have just come straight out of Tom Baker's last season. So I like that. And you've got that quite scientific, you know, that well, contemporary scientific, although it's an idea that's been around a long time, it's something that's been sort of like scientists have been looking at kind of trying to prove. More recently, that there's the virtual nature of reality, of our reality, as it were. But there's the flat direction, which we've kind of mentioned, you know, like the comedy bits. The director of this episode is not, clearly not a comedy director, Daniel Netheim, because every time there's a gag in there, it just doesn't work. And I'm not saying it should work, I'm not saying those gags should be there, because I really don't feel that they should be, and I do think that they slow things down unnecessarily, but the gags just don't work, and that's got to be down to the direction. That, you know, you're going to get to the end of the episode regardless with that script and you're going to be let down, but there's various points throughout where there's very good moments, and if they were just more bundled together as good moments without the comedy, you'd at very least get a nice flowing episode to the end to be let down with, rather than an episode with a few naff moments in between. Like James mentioned, like the CERN bit, that was very flat. It didn't really work. There was nothing, partly because we worked out straight away what was going on. And it's just a strange way of, you know, mass suicide is probably not the best way of, I don't know, that just that whole thing just doesn't seem to work for me, like the certain area. But yeah, I'm just saying, there's good direction, but there's some kind of flat direction in there which doesn't lift the episode in the way it probably should. In short.
Yeah, well, it's tough to say. I mean, in one way, like you said, we had all just finished watching this episode. I wonder how it would have been. To have had a day to process before recording this podcast, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what we usually do, isn't it? We usually have a day, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days. Someone sends me an email with their thoughts in it, that sort of thing. But we've gone straight into a podcast after the episode this time, which is it's quite different for us. So if we are sounding vague or unconvinced about anything, it's because our brains haven't fully, understood what we watched and made a decision upon it, I suppose.
You know, I also think it would have worked better had an alien come to Earth to talk to the Doctor and not the Pope. I mean, obviously the Pope was too far no matter what. Readers won't know this, but when there was a clip that was released online, a promotional clip, it was of the Pope interrupting Bill's date. And I unfortunately was very pessimistic about the upcoming episode, because that clip alone made me realize that Moffat hadn't changed his ways and that the episode was going to be a mess. Mm. I was hopeful that something would be better. So I had emailed the guys and told them I'm not excited for this week's episode. And then watching it, while I felt it was a little bit better presented than that clip made it out to be, it still didn't quite work. Like, I don't like this whole concept that people on Earth understand that the Doctor is this alien that helps us, and that they all have this ability to reach him when they need him. I think it would be better if it was, maybe even if a Time Lord had come and said, hey, something's coming and you got to deal with this. Because I think that's something the new series is missing, a higher power coming to the Doctor, somebody that, you know, like, we always talk about this in the podcast about how, like, the 60s Time Lords were scary, or that, you know, even in the 70s, one of them could just whisk Tom, Harry, and Sarah away to the Dalek homeworld, to Skaro, and say, hey, sort this out, see you later, you know, and just go. And I kind of miss that aspect. Even one of my favorite moments, and I've been thinking about this one a lot lately, as a matter of fact, I'm probably going to watch this story next, is The Key to Time, the beginning of The Key to Time. My God, and the name is escaping me. But regardless, you have the White Guardian in the beginning, and he tells the Doctor, you know, you need to do this. You need to go look for the Key to Time. And Tom says, well, what happens if I refuse? And he says, nothing. And he says, nothing. Oh, okay. And he says, yes, ever. You know, like, that's an incredible threat. And Tom takes it seriously. The Doctor takes it seriously. He realizes, okay, I have to do this because this higher power can stop me, can do something to me. And that's missing. It's like the Doctor can't be stopped. He can't be touched. And here, ordinary humans can come to him.
The Doctor is the higher power.
Yeah, and it's terrible. And, like, with the Time Lords being back, they're just... Unfortunately, Moffat and Russell, neither one of them really did much to improve them. Russell, perhaps a little bit better, I guess. But they're just treated like jokes. They all cower to the Doctor. They're no different than they were in the 80s of the show, where they should be more like they were in the past. The Doctor should know they've got technology that can stop me. They can trap me. They can catch me. They've given me these lives. They didn't have to give me these lives. Maybe I owe them something.
Well, you know, we saw the Pentagon in this episode. And, you know, flip that round to Gallifrey. Maybe it's time they brought back the CIA of Gallifrey for some real badass Time Lord manipulation. And this is what you're going to do, Doctor. We're the real masters of Gallifrey.
I would honestly be happy with that if it was done well, because obviously they, you know, CIA, it was a joke name for the episode, and it's funny you should bring that up because I was just watching that episode today, well, the first one with it. But yeah, but I would be happy with that if we got to see some Time Lords, or, as I said, some being with power that just came to the Doctor. Like, if the Doctor's watching this vault was not because he made a promise to go be the Master's Keeper, you know, like, oh, I'm going to take care of that one. If it was more, if it was bigger, if it was like, if it was more like The Key to Time, where he's watching this vault because he was forced to, you know, he was forced to promise to watch this vault, that would make things more impressive for me. It would make things on a grander scale. Right now, it just feels like, hey, you know what? The Doctor has spent apparently 50 years on Earth, of, you know, of this thousand, that he's going to what, stay on this planet just to watch the Master in a vault? Like, that's why, that's the reason. It's wasted now. And now we have those links in the stories that we've talked about before, where those particular episodes are going to be less enjoyable because now they have this connection at the end, which isn't a good payoff.
Well, I think we'll find out a bit more about that in coming weeks, so we can maybe talk about that a bit more then. But, that's certainly how it looks at the moment. James McLean, you've been very quiet for the past 20 minutes.
Well, I've been a bit loud for the others, so I thought I'd let you get on with some serious ball ratting.
Nothing new there. I'm curious about this term ball ratting. Do you know, I often... Now I'm saying ball ratting, it's beginning to sound like some sort of seedy sexual term. But I was going to say, whenever I write the word board, even sideboard, I do write borad, sideborad.
Well, there we go.
The initial typing of it. This is a pro tip for you out there, dear listener. If you're typing something incorrectly all the time, don't just delete the word, the part of the word you got wrong. Delete the entire word and type it properly. And a couple of times, you should reprogram your fingers to get it right. Pro writing tips on the podcast with a K there.
And this podcast was brought to you by.
I mean, it's funny though. I mean, going back to season six, it is a fact that, you know, I still think a lot with him is that it's the characters and the way he writes that often is the problem. And there was a bit of that in there, obviously. But yeah, I mean, those ones I was watching, you know, were fairly reasonable. The
Rebel Flesh and the Almost People
was fairly good. It was fairly interesting. And then having watched the Silurian one and realizing there's not actually a horrendous amount of difference between the two, but I don't know. It just then Doctor Who was never totally as bad as I remember in some ways, but when it was bad, and by the last few, it was just bad all the time.
Yeah.
And this, I think, I'm just angry that this one was just such a turd, and it didn't need to be. And after having five really solid episodes,
I mean,
knock. I agree, Brian. There were some sort of callbacks to. It didn't feel, for me, it didn't feel very fresh. It felt like it was pushing itself a bit. But then, you know, Davis episodes did that. It felt, in some ways, to me, like I could imagine it in the Davis era, in some respects.
I can imagine a lot of this series in the Davis era.
But this one just felt, it didn't even really feel like, it didn't even have the wit that Moffat can, you know, occasionally do. There was nothing witty in it. There was no wit. There was just this sort of dry attempt to be, like you say, the Android Invasion come Da Vinci Code. And,
Is this the future of writing, do you think? Is it that basically we pick two books off a shelf and then just say, oh, these two have nothing to do with each other, let's merge them? Do you remember when we used to do that thing called What Have You Been Watching, or Recommendations?
Yes.
I don't ever remember it being called What Have You Been Watching, but okay. Yeah.
Was it not? Oh,
James's enthusiasm right there is great.
Yeah, totally, isn't it? Yeah. Maybe we'll just do it on our own. What episodes have you been watching of Doctor Who, Brian?
I'll be honest. If you're going to play the game, What Have You Been Watching? I really haven't been watching much at all. For some reason, I've been in this lull where I can't find anything that I want to watch. We have been watching here a little bit of Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Uh-huh.
We've still been going through the odd episode or two of the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Oh, right. Okay, one of the greatest sitcoms of all time.
Right. It's actually, a lot of it still lives up to today. It's really quite funny, especially at how clever they were in the 60s to have a rotating intro sequence so that you didn't know what was coming up. You know, they did it so well because they played the same one for so long before they threw that twist in that he didn't trip over the ottoman. But regardless, anyway, aside from that, I did decide I wanted to watch some Doctor Who, and I watched a couple random episodes here. But the latest one I just started was The Deadly Assassin. Aside from that, I did actually watch The Android Invasion, which I don't know why that didn't immediately come into my mind when I was watching the episode that was done, but. You know,
it was the eye patch, wasn't it? If the eye patch had been in there, you'd be like, oh, yeah, it's that one.
Totally thrown off, yeah. But no, it's a little difficult because I kind of feel like I'm in the mood to watch Tom Baker.
Yes.
But well, there's a lot. I feel like I've watched so many of them that I've watched them so many times that, like, I go, okay, I want to watch this one. And then my brain immediately goes through every scene. And I'm like, well. I guess I just watched that.
Yeah. There's still a lot of again this week. There was Tom Baker in that performance of Peter Capaldi's. Those little kind of downplayed, morose moments of doom. That he emotes are very much like Tom Baker in the early days.
which is not a bad thing.
It's
He's his own doctor, which is good.
Yeah.
But it's not a bad thing that there's some callbacks. I never really mind that so much.
No, me neither. We've recently watched the end of the second series of Man in the High Castle. Which the second series probably wasn't as consistent as the first, but it's still a good run of episodes. And it's there's a lot of American shows at the moment are using British leads.
Yeah.
Now there's two in the Man in the High Castle. There's Rufus Sewell and the other guy whose name escapes me at the moment. He plays a Jewish character, Frank. And then there's this new Neil Gaiman one, American Gods, which has got two British leads as well. It's got the guy from Lovejoy.
Ian McShane.
Ian McShane, yeah. And Ricky Whittle, who plays the main character. He's British as well. He's a former Hollyoaks soap actor. So and we watched the first episode of that, Kerry and I, and although it's a very impressive production, kind of decided that if there's any children listening to the podcast right now, switch off or skip forward 10 seconds. There's a scene in which a man is eaten by a woman's vagina. I decided after watching the end of the episode that probably it wasn't for me, but I'm sure it'll do very well. I think it's on Amazon. But what we have been watching, we've watched the first series of Line of Duty, because we've missed it with having children and everything. And just started the second series of Line of Duty as well. It's a very good show.
Keely Hawes is in
the second series as well. So.
It's a good series.
Yeah.
When you said that we've got British leads in a lot of American shows, which is true, you reminded me I did finish watching Iron Fist. Iron Fist, because I'm a Marvel fan. I'm trying to keep up with those things because I want to see how the Defenders go. And I have to say, Iron Fist, what I've seen online, has had mixed reviews. Some people loved it, some people just thought it was dreadful, and some people were middling. I'm kind of in the middle group there. I watched it going, okay, it's not bad. I think, okay, there's a couple things here. I think Marvel needs to sit there and say, hey, you know what? 13 episodes a series is a little too long, considering all we're really telling is one movie over 13 episodes. So that's technically 13-hour-long movie that you don't need to watch. But I would say if they had knocked it down to like 6 or 8 episodes, it probably could have been a pretty solid season, so long as they recast the guy playing Iron Fist, the lead female character, the lead heroine, and the main villain. Then it would have been a great show.
That's Finn Jones, isn't it?
That's Finn Jones,
who's
also
an ex-Hollyoaks actor.
Mm.
And he was in... he's Santiago in The Death of the Doctor. Joe Grant's grandson.
I didn't even realise he was in Doctor Who.
Yeah, and he's Loras Tyrell in Game of Thrones.
Hmm. Yeah, Game of Thrones I knew. I don't really watch that show, but... I don't know. I just found that... I don't know if it was poorly put together or if the writing was poor or if these actors really aren't up to scratch, I guess. But they didn't wow me. And like, you know, some of the characters were okay. I liked some of them. But there's one guy who kind of becomes the main villain throughout the series. He comes in like midway or something like that. And I thought like... Why did you bring this guy in here? You were doing so well with the other people that were already in there. Why did you need that person? But when you go through it, Finn Jones is, of course, as you've noted already, a British actor. And I swore, yeah, that's what I thought. The lead female actor, Colleen Wing, the lead heroine, she is a British actor. And then I think this guy, okay, so the main villain guy is from Puerto Rico. But... I just sat there watching the three of them. Like, I don't. They were so dry, and it wasn't fun. So it's there you go, people. My opinions on Doctor Who not being so good. It doesn't just stop with Doctor Who. It's where things really aren't good. You can see that I'm not just bashing on Moffat. This show just didn't work.
Sure, yeah.
But like, you know, Daredevil was good. Jessica Jones was good. I even liked Luke Cage. I felt, again, the only thing that Luke Cage suffered on a little bit for me was that the same thing I said, it should have been really more like 8 episodes because the story dragged a little bit just because of the story they were telling taking place over 13 episodes was just too long. But The actors were good and the story was good, you know, but Iron Fist just... I felt the drag. I couldn't. They put it on Netflix so that you can binge watch it, but you can't binge watch it. You'd be so bored.
Jessica Henwick is the name of the actress that you refer to. She was also in False Awakens, and she's also in Game of Thrones. I noticed that you mentioned Luke Cage. Did they recast Luke Cage? From Jessica Jones. Is it the same guy?
It's the same guy.
Right.
Okay. Who I originally thought, I don't know if this guy can carry a series. And maybe it's a major credit to a lot of the people that were around him, because it was done well. His own series was done a lot better. He's still a little dry. But I don't know. Luke Cage had a good story at it, and it worked well, and I thought he worked well, surprisingly, whereas in Jessica Jones, I felt, you know, maybe they should have recast him. But no, he did well in his own series.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, that is Doctor Who Series 10, Episode 6, Extremis, plus other things. We are basically... poised for an alien invasion, I beg your pardon, by some strange monk guys. I'm really hoping that the Doctor and Missy and Bill and Nardole aren't already in a virtual universe before they were taken into a virtual universe, because that would cause some problems with not just storytelling, but also Stephen Moffat's reputation. Next week, Doctor Who continues with the following episode in the, some say it's a two-parter, some say it's a three-parter. But next time it's The Pyramid at the End of the World by Peter Harness, who apparently needed help from Stephen Moffat in some way. So we'll find out what happens next, and we'll be back with you to discuss it next week. Until then, it's goodbye. And and here's a trailer for you to enjoy on the way out. Bye-bye.
Tell me what you see.
It's a 5,000-year-old pyramid.
One little problem. It wasn't there yesterday.
Those creatures in that pyramid, they have studied you, and they have chosen this exact moment and this exact place.
What's wrong with the Doctor?
I lied. I've been blind since Chasm Forge. Coordinate your attacks.
They did not come here in peace.
We will take this planet and its people. Life on Earth will cease. My humanity's homeland.
This is a Beyond Casterbrus podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCasterbrus.com.
And there's a lot to talk about with this episode, so given that we've all just watched it and not had time to digest things properly, I think we've got a good podcast out of that.
There's nothing to digest there. My opinion on that is not going to change anytime soon.
Oh, that's going in.